Thank you for joining me today in MX Asian American, or Mixis Asian American. If you don't know, MX or Mixis represents the gender-neutral presentation of Miss or Mr. My name is Karen Zhang, and I will be your host, guiding you through the Asian diasporic experience with an emphasis on the Asian American experience. Enjoy the show! Welcome back, everyone, to MX Asian American. Today we have Don. You want to introduce yourself first to the listeners?
Yeah. Hi, everybody. My name is Non. I'm a 28-year-old male in Portland, Oregon. Thank you for having me on this podcast.
Awesome. Thank you, Non, for coming on. I always like to start basically from the beginning. So could you tell us a little bit about how and where you grew up?
Yeah. I am born and raised in Portland, Oregon. Portland has been my home for the last 28 years. My parents immigrated here from Vietnam, and they met here in Portland picking strawberries. They grew up, they bought a home in like North Portland, Northeast Portland, actually. And then in the late 90s, we moved to our house in inner Southeast Portland. And yeah, I grew up there. My sister grew up there. My girlfriend and I just bought our own house, and we live literally down the street from my parents. So just Aww. Born and raised as a inner Southeast Portland kid. And you know, my girlfriend's from Hawaii. We met in college down in Eugene. And you know, we've talked about coming back, moving to Hawaii, stuff like that too. But now we've built such a big network, and you know, everything that we do is and revolves around Portland. So, and now, you know, now that we have our home here, I think it's we're pretty set in stone and just continuing our life and our future here in Portland. So yeah.
Awesome. Congratulations on the house. I know that's super big step, especially in this economy.
Yeah, no, it's that or renting. And so definitely had a lot of support. You know, we couldn't have done it by ourselves. That's for sure. And so thank you to our parents, you know, our realtor, and just kind of everybody who's helped. Because in today's economy and today's market and stuff like that, you know, you don't have that strong support structure. And I mean, like financially, it is definitely really hard to get a home. So we are definitely very grateful for that. Thank you.
Yeah. So, since you've lived in Oregon for so long, could you tell me a little bit about, like, I guess high school, college? Did you have any idea of what you wanted to do?
So, I went to David Douglas School District, which is a public high school, one of the largest high schools in Portland, Oregon. You know, just being Asian. Obviously, the stereotype is to be an engineer, to be a lawyer, to be pharmacist, doctor, you know. So I did kind of fall into that I would say expectation, because, you know, I didn't grow up with any siblings. My parents are just, you know, lower class, middle class working people. And so that's kind of their view of like success, or like that American dream. Is to like go into those sort of industries, you know, like, and they, you know, rightfully so, they just wanted me to be successful and to be financially stable for everything that comes along with, you know, being in those sort of fields. And so my uncle, which is my mom's youngest brother, he graduated valedictorian. He went to Oregon State University. He became a pharmacist. He met his wife. She's a doctor. My aunt's a nurse. My uncle's an engineer, you know, so.
Wow.
Kind of sort of what you grew up around. That's what you know about, right? Mm-hmm. And so I did fall into that trap of kind of wanting to be a pharmacist, right? Because I was like, okay, like this is easy. Like I kind of like school's all right, you know. Took a couple anatomy classes, a little hard to remember all the facts and details, but I thought I could. And I went to a job shadow that the school had you do, and I went for one day over the weekend. And I shadowed a pharmacist at Target, and it was so boring, right? I didn't like it. It was very slow paced, and it was just very like mindless work, you know. I respect my uncles and all my friends who are now pharmacists, and they're making a killing, but it just wasn't really my vibe. And and then it kind of like then it came down to like, okay, what, like the teachers and stuff would ask, like, what are you interested in? What are you good at? I love business. I was a big sneakerhead. And with being a sneakerhead comes sneaker reselling. And so, I kind of developed this sort of like side hustle at a young age, on buying and selling shoes. And so I really like that concept of buying something low and then turning a profit, right? So then I was like, you know what? I want to do business. Like, this is what I'm passionate about. This is what I want to do. And this is going to be my focus. And so as I graduated high school, there were a couple of schools, we're going through college application. And I applied all pretty much locally, except for one school up in like Pullman, Washington, Washington State University. And I got accepted there. I got accepted to Portland State University and then University of Oregon. And University of Oregon was my top choice. And so, boom, University of Oregon, they're known for business. I like business. I'm gonna go to the University of Oregon and commit as a Duff. And so, and then you go to college and then you learn about the different fields of business. So now you have advertising, marketing, accounting, finance, right? So and now I'm back to that kind of like, okay, so like I want to do business, but these are only like the options I have. Like, I don't even like any of this. Like, I want to do like the reselling. Like, how do I turn the profit? How do I learn that stuff? And that was where then I was stumped for a little bit in college too, not really knowing which field of business I wanted to go into. Luckily, at the University of Oregon, there was this program called General Social Science with a focus in business, social sciences, and economy. And when I talked to my counselor and I looked at the classes, that program gave you more of a flexibility on just like general business, right? So you kind of took a little bit of econ class, you took a little bit of business communication class, negotiation class, and that felt more aligned with what I wanted to do. And so I graduated the University of Oregon with a general social science degree with a focus in business and economy. And that kind of sort of just it's very broad, so it's just a really general business degree. But that was kind of what I used to kind of just drove myself post college and gave me more of a flexibility on finding work. And so, a couple of years later, a couple of jobs later, I now work in semiconductor. I work for a German company. We build lasers and we sell them to big semiconductor companies like Intel, TSMC. I'm a project coordinator and, 90% of my work is just talking to our customer in the semiconductor industry, which is ASML. They own a very huge portion of semiconductor business that happens around the world. And they're our customer. And so we do a lot of meetings, a lot of negotiation, a lot of conversations about just how these multi-million dollar machines are installed. And it definitely took a while to get here. A lot of different ups and downs and trying to really figure out what I was good at. But, again, thank you to the family structure. And it allowed me to kind of have the flexibility to really search for what I wanted to do for a couple of years after college before I kind of like settled in. So, that's kind of like I didn't know what I wanted to do, and then now I know what I want to do. And at least I can see myself here for a really long time, and prospering at this career.
I guess I want to ask, what are, I guess, like, what are some qualities of this career, in this industry that you feel like make you certain that you want to do this for the long term?
It's in today's, I think it's after the pandemic, definitely the ability to work hybrid is really good. It's like it's that company culture that if management understands that work can be completed whether you're in or you're at home or in office or at a home office, at your home, and the job can still be done, the projects, the deadlines, everything can be met, and then they have no problem with it. I do believe you think that's Now that's really it's like that's such a big quality that any working environment has that kind of can retain their employees, right? So with all the projects that I have on the side with my nonprofit, with the Lion Dance and everything that I'm a part of, my work allows me to do all of that freely and gives me a lot of flexibility where I don't need to take PTO, I don't need to submit for time off. Or come in late, stay later type of deal. You know, I can do what I have to do, and it won't interfere with my work, and my work doesn't interfere with all these projects. And so I think that is really one big thing that will keep me with this company for a long time is their understanding and their flexibility on everyone's time and schedule.
Yeah, that is a really good point. I think like the older I get, the more I value like the flexibility.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. So, I guess tell us a little bit about like the first catalyst or what influenced you to even want to start the White Lotus Foundation.
The White Lotus Foundation started in 2021, right after, shortly after, you know, the pandemic rules and regulations were lifted. White Lotus as a brand started actually in 2015 while I was in college. It started as the White Lotus Lion Dance Team. And it was just a group of me and my friends who grew up lion dancing for our Buddhist youth group. We wanted a way to sort of just be more innovative and creative with the art and traditions of lion dancing in the Portland community. So at the time when we started the team, there were other teams around. Older teams, and they were doing lion dancing as well for Chinese New Year and other celebrations. But it was very, you could say, just kind of like underwhelming to watch, right? There was not really a reason why clients that or like spectators could stand there and watch a performance back then and be like, I want that for my own celebration. So we kind of saw that, and we started our own team. And at the time, the U.S. lion dance scene was kind of just getting started, right? There was hype around it, and so we joined in at a really good time, and we built a small buzz with our team around the Portland area. And from 2015 to the pandemic, we grew the team to about 20 members, 20 to 30 members, all high school and young college members around the Southeast Portland area. And we performed at dozens of events and did it year round. So weddings, grand openings, birthday, festivals, anything, everything we were performing at. So during COVID, all that stopped, right? Everybody had to social distance. We couldn't have practice. Everybody's just at home, confined to their space. And at the time, I was just bored, honestly, you know, just being at home, not working. I had a lot of time and I had a lot of just creative spark. And one of it was, I'm gonna buy thank you cards. I'm gonna drop them off to my members, all my high school members. I'm gonna have them write thank you cards, handwritten. I'm gonna collect them. And we are going to be passing these cards out along with food and other basic gifts to the frontline workers that are our clients. So we performed for like a Vietnamese supermarket. They were open during the pandemic. Those are frontline workers. We also performed for various retirement homes. The nurses there, the staff there are also frontline workers. So we partnered with a couple local food spots that are also of our clients. We asked them for a discount and we bought pre-packed lunch and brought them to these frontline workers. And that's kind of sort of what started the whole initiative of the White Lotus Foundation, is that we wanted to just give back to our community through the line dance performances. So yeah, that's kind of initially what started the idea of starting the White Lotus Foundation. Was it started from the line dance team, and then it, you know, kind of thanks to COVID, it kind of gave us that push, or gave me that push to try something new, and we got a really good response to it. from our clients, from our following, from just a lot of the people that we work with, and our peers and stuff. And I think that's where it kind of was like, you know what? This is positive. This is what I want to start with my team. And that's how the White Lotus Foundation came to fruition.
Yeah, that's super cool. That you started with like the lion dance team. I feel like
Thank you. Yeah.
it's really hard to find like cultural performances like that, or even like learn how to do them. So that's like super cool. And when you were describing like going to different grocery stores and like different clients to perform for them, I could really see it in my mind, like a
Thank
network
you.
of people and like community coming together.
Yes. Yes. I think honestly, to be as humble as possible, we definitely had an influence in lion dancing here in Portland. What was originally back then just a performance that would only, happen during Lunar New Year, now it's a performance that is recognized by different ethnicities, different cultural organizations. Like we're at performances for like other community, right? Non-Asian community events. And so we're there adding a bit of our culture to those celebrations. I do believe that, over the last 9 years, we've definitely had an impact here in the Portland community with what we do. And, people are able to see it. People are able to see the hard work, the innovative performance, the creativity into putting a performance together so that it's, family friendly, it's memorable, it's interactive, as well as, entertaining. And so that alone really started everything for us, is to be able to like grow the lion dance team to where it needs to be so that we can use that as like a foundation for our other work that we want to achieve.
Yeah, I love that. Just spreading the culture everywhere. So I guess during your journey, did you face any obstacles? And if you did, like how did you overcome them?
I mean, there's a lot of obstacles to doing anything, honestly. A lot of pushbacks, a
That's
lot of negativity, one of it is just kind of like gaining the trust of clients in both the lion dance work and the foundation work. Because we do this and we're all young, right? I'm only 28, but when I started the lion dance team, I was only 19. You're approaching businesses offering lion dance performance, and we'll be like, oh, it's gonna cost X amount of dollars, and they're like, okay, like, hey, like, do you have someone that that we can talk to, after we come to a decision, or can my boss call your boss? And it's like, oh, like, this is my team, and so trying to start off at getting people to work with someone as young as me, I'm trying to put on these performances and meet their expectation. That's definitely an obstacle to come across, that we came across, right? With the foundation work, trying to get sponsors and community leaders to understand our vision and to trust us, to fund us and stuff like that. That also was an obstacle and is still an obstacle. When people think about nonprofits, they're looking at people who have been in polit like who are in politics, who have worked in this for the city, for the state, or just like really big businesses, but I started a nonprofit just during like right after COVID because I wanted to make a difference, right? And so, with these combined, throughout our journey, these are the two biggest obstacles. It's just to get people to understand you and sort of bridge that generational gap and understanding, and really get people like, the people that we want to work with to understand that this is just kind of what the new way of working is. It's like you guys are working with more young people, but they are qualified. We have our experiences and stuff like that it really puts us where we need to be, with what we're trying to do. And yeah, so I would say that, yeah, those are some big obstacles. And if you don't mind, I guess a really another big one too that we've recently come across is the competition, right? Nowadays, I would say that, when the whole Stop Asian Hate movement was more the community, it was more what would you say it? More social media, it was more present, right? So more people started, looking into it and showing highlight to the movement, understanding what AAPI meant, ANHPI meant. I think from there, it definitely sparked a lot of other people in our community to also start their own nonprofits. So now, we're working with other nonprofits that are also, in the same industry with the same mission, same age group, and they're also trying to achieve what we're trying to achieve. And so yeah, that's, competition is good. It's, I would say more, it's kind of like, it's friendly competition. It's a way for the community to grow, right? So it's not bad that more and more groups are coming up and doing more events similar to ours, sharing the same missions, sharing the same goal. But it is also an obstacle because now you're competing with them for the same grants, for the same initiative. And it's just like, to try to get these donors and organizations to understand your vision over theirs or theirs over yours. And I think that's also, that has now also become one of a difficulty that we face is the friendly competition that's kind of building up around our community.
Yeah, I totally see that happening too. It sounds like you're just gonna do you've been doing, but we'll have to be doing more, like negotiation and pitching yourself. And it's great that there's like more groups where you can like collaborate with, but also like you're also competing against them. So it's a interesting landscape.
It's because, like a lot of the times I feel like everybody wants to, or not everybody, but someone also has the same ideas and vision, and they want to be able to execute it in their own way. So, the way we do our events, our programs, our what we do, to us is amazing. We have great results from it. It's, we love that the turnout and the effect that it has. But then there's always going to be someone else who look at what we do, they'll see the negativity in it, and then they'll be like, you know what? We can do it better. And so that's how I see it. And it's just, sometimes, when you're trying to do something in the most like authentic way or the most authentic version possible, and then you see the other groups do the same thing, but in the most non-authentic way, that's kind of where it, like, all the hard work that you're trying to do, the difference that we're trying to make is now kind of being overshadowed or overlooked at. And then again, it kind of like there's a wrong impression of that, So then it goes back to what I was talking about line dancing earlier. The reason why we started the line dance team was we didn't, the other local line dance team in the group, in the community, were not performing line dancing to the standard that, you were a spectator, you watch them, you would want them at your own event. So the same thing with like our night markets that we do, right? We do it with intent for not only vendors to, turn a profit, sell out, have a good time, but we also do it to so that spectators who come, attendees who come and enjoy the event, they know that this is the expectation of what like an Asian night market is really like. We go to these other events that other organizations host, and they also, call it AAPI, Asian American, whatever it may be. They put those keywords in. But nothing is Asian about it. Nothing, this is, there's no authenticity. And so that to us kind of like, when we're attending those events, we look at it, we're like, okay, like What is authentic about this? What is Asian about this? If this was an event that, someone who didn't go to our night market, a real Asian night market, and then they went to one of these events, is this the, is this their perception of what Asian night market is? And if it is, then it's kind of like, they may not even give our markets a chance because their impression is already kind of like, oh, like this is, there's really nothing Asian about this. This is just like another night market. So,
I
I would
see
say
what you
that's,
mean.
I see that's really something difficult to kind of like comb through while we're doing what we do, is to try to get everyone else to do it, or wanting everyone to do it authentically as well. Kind of just like, the Richmond night market or the 626 night market. That's kind of what we're I'm trying to mirror and then do. Yeah, sorry, a little off
No, that
track there, I felt off,
No, it's
but
all good. That does sound very hard because you never, it's really, really hard to change like another organization's values and how they stand and their, vision and stuff. But now that we've been through the obstacles, could you tell us a little bit about like what you think the most rewarding parts of this journey has been?
The reward comes from the outcome and the impact of the events, of the performances, of sort of just, everything and every idea that we have. So through the clients that we've met, through lion dancing and the opportunities that have been given to us, that's super rewarding because 9 years ago, I would not have seen us perform for some of these big clients in Portland, the revenue that we've raised, and just the impact. Again, it's the impact is very huge for me. So yeah, I mean that from the line dancing, that's the clients that we've met, the crowds that we've been at. And then for the night markets, it's just being able to highlight and showcase AAPI small business owners, creators, cooks, chefs, everyone. When we hosted our first event, we didn't know how many Asian-owned small businesses were in Portland, and to see them come out to bring their craft and their products out, and at the end of the event when we check in with them and they're like, oh my gosh, we sold out, we didn't bring enough, we didn't think it would be this packed, those sort of kind of comments are super rewarding to us. And to see it, event after event, performances after performances, year after year, it's really what pushes me and my team to continue doing what we're doing. Even though, like this is not our full-time gig. Everybody has their professional careers that they do and they commit to. But we have enough passion and fuel to keep growing and pushing the direction for where White Lotus needs to go. All of
Oh, I
that is
love
just
that.
super impactful and it's very re rewarding to see.
When you really, really feel like that you're making an impact, that's makes you feel like full. So I guess like closing question, do you have any like near future plans for the White Lotus Foundation?
So next year, it's our 10-year anniversary of the White Lotus Lion Dance. The White Lotus Foundation hasn't been around for that long yet, but it is going to be a celebration for the White Lotus Foundation as well. Because when we started the nonprofit, we wanted the White Lotus Foundation to be like the umbrella for all the other programs and stuff that we want to do and accomplish under the White Lotus Foundation. And so that's going to be our big celebration next year, is to, just really thank our supporter, our friends, our family, and show them what they've been contributing to over the last 10 years. And moving forward, our nonprofit is a charity, and so we want to be able to give back to the Portland community, in various ways, charitable acts. So definitely we want to start our own scholarship. We want to be our, you know, have grants and be able to donate money to organizations in the community that needs it, potentially having high schoolers and even college members apply for our scholarship and all of that. And, you know, to really kind of look out for the individuals in the AAPI community in Portland, because Portland's our home. This is our foundation. This is where, you know, we grew up and we prospered from. So we need to take care of our own community first, before we look into, you know, a bigger picture. And that bigger picture would be then to do like mission trips to Southeast Asia and like provide food or basic household needs and medical stuff. You know, we want to be able to accomplish that too. But, you know, everything starts, we have to really hone into the impact that we can have on our community first before we can think about, you know, our impact on the rest of the world. So, you know, that's kind of the
Absolutely.
future plans that we have. And I can see us achieving all of those. You know, in the next couple of years.
Yeah, that's super exciting. And I'll definitely be on the lookout for everything that the White Lotus Foundation will be
Thank
doing.
you. Thank you so much.
Yeah.
Thank you.
And thank you so much, for coming on the show. Where can listeners find you, support you guys?
Yeah. Visit our website, thewhitelotusfoundation.org. It has all of our information, our initiative. It's very user-friendly and very just modern. You know, it's not a really long, lengthy website, but it's very just packed full of good information. It's good to really learn about our story and what our goals and stuff are, who we work with, stuff like that. On the Lion Dance page, whitelotuslionedance.com. And then Instagram is White Lotus, at White Lotus Lion Dance and at the White Lotus Foundation. So those are our social medias. Those are kind of where we're the most active on, and you can stay up to date with our performances, our pictures, our events, everything like that.
Awesome. Thank you again, Nan, for coming on the show.
Of course, thank you so much, Karen, for having me.